You're listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only Magic the Gathering podcast you're listening to right now. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza, and you'll notice that I'm not introducing somebody else right now, and that is because Morgan, my great co-host, is not available to record at the moment. There's a heat wave going through most of the continent, and AC is broken over there, and I am not going to force somebody I care about to stay in a hot room for more than an hour just to talk on a podcast. There are more important things in this world than talking on a podcast, and that is your health and comfort. And Morgan, love you, buddy, and I'm happy we came to this decision for your own safety. So no Morgan this week. It's just Mikey off the top. It's me, Mike Carrozza, at Mike Carrozza on all platforms. You know, Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, at MikeCarrozza. And, of course, we're back on another episode of the Bullcast. Am I the Bullcast? The podcast you love so much that you're here for it now. I'm not going to spend too much time off the top or at the end, really, because I had a delightful conversation, and I can't wait for you to get into it. This isn't going to be a Commander-focused episode. It features Sirkovitz from 17 Lands, who is who doesn't care about Commander. But we do discuss a story and a pet peeve that I find quite interesting. Then if you're at all into limited formats, I think this is a very fun conversation. And he gets into a great idea that I think we should be pushing Wizards to implement. I think it's a really cool idea. So let's begin with the fact that we are sponsored by Cardsphere.com. Cardsphere, get your cards here. There's a referral link in the show notes and the description. You can use that to sign up. I am still waiting for Final Fantasy to cool down a little bit more before I, reload my wallet on there and I start going a little bit happy on the trigger with the buying up of Sephiroths. I need that flip Sephiroth real bad for like 9 decks. So the good thing about that is that I could put it in one MDFC and then I can just carry it with all the stuff that I have for other decks, like treasure tokens and my my infinite tokens and stuff like that. And I'll just have an errant one copy of Sephiroth that I can then have in all my decks because I use the MDFC placeholder cards for proxies in my deck for cards that I don't necessarily want to buy over and over again. Or cards that are MDFCs, and I put them with my commander in the command zone because I like being able to flip them over without taking them out. Okay, that's fun. I don't know why I got self-conscious talking about that. It feels okay. Anyway, whatever. Point is, Cardsphere is a great place to get cards way on the cheap. You're dealing with people directly. You're looking for cards, and you know sometimes you're not going to find them easily on your, you know, LGS's websites, and somehow in Cardsphere, somebody in that corner of the world is looking to offload the perfect card for you, and you just get to add it to your cart and maybe peruse some more of their wares. You know what I mean? So Cardsphere.com, excellent card selling service, card buying service, card trading service. Use the referral link in our description, and thanks for sponsoring us, Cardsphere. We're really happy about that. Also, shout out to Bonebox Games. Use promo code BULLCAST to check out for a little extra discount on that end. Shout out to Who's a Good Boy, the game where dogs can sin. Sheehan and his wife Julia, they put together a game, and it's on Kickstarter right now. Coming up in the next couple weeks, I'll be plugging another friend of mine. Winslow Dumain has a game coming onto Kickstarter very soon. It's called The Restless. It is very interesting and very gross and weird, and it's a real dungeon crawler. It's something that you want to have real messed up, ominous music to play in the background while you play it. I play tested it when I was in Chicago hanging out with him, and man, it's so dense. It's very interesting, and I think Commander players will take to it very well. So if you're looking to spice things up and change things up on your Commander nights, I do recommend checking out The Restless. I'll be talking about that in the next coming weeks. Now, in order to stave off that person who loves telling me to stop doing so many ads off the top of the episode, I will get into the conversation. Hey, Ken, time to drop that music because we're getting a call. We've got a caller on the line. Who am I speaking to today?
You're talking to Sherkovitz, the only content creator that generated their nickname by randomly pulling Scrabble letters from the box.
Are you serious? That's how that worked? Hold on, I got plenty of questions.
No,
immediately.
The backstory is a bit more grim than that, but...
yeah, I was going to say, historically speaking, there might be a lot more to it. Sherkovitz, what a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you for calling in today.
A pleasure is mine. That's why I called.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. That's why you called. Then no other organization went into this. It's not like we had to figure out whether or not time zones are going to be working for us and how to navigate that. We've been at this for a little bit of time. I've been expecting your call, and I'm thrilled to have you to chat about Magic from the perspective of a person who doesn't necessarily operate in the circles of Commander. You are someone I know from 17 lands, the limited website of choice for anybody doing anything Magic related in the limited space.
Yeah, I definitely am not a Commander player. As I told you before we recorded in our many, many meetings that preceded this one, I played Commander the Majestic one time in my life. It was forced. They gave me the deck. Yeah. They told me to pilot it. I didn't know what was in it. Luckily, I conceded very quickly and moved on with my life and proceeded to play Winston Draft with my friend at the back of the LGS, like the true gentleman.
That's what I'm talking about. You love a draft. And that's the thing is, like, again, it is not uncommon for somebody to have like an enfranchised Magic player such as yourself who plays one format like limited or, you know, even standard players and saying, hey, you know the rules well enough. You read the cards intently enough. Here's a deck and see what you can do with it. It's multiplayer. See if you like Commander. And your reaction was eject button. This is just not for me. It's not scratching the same itch. It's not what I come here for. But it has had like a successful conversion rate on some people. But again, if you didn't want to do it in the first place, sorry you played that one game. You never have to play Commander as long as I'm around. You don't got to play Commander. I got your back on that. I'll hop in whatever seat somebody's forcing you into and I'll play that game for you.
I mean, I don't necessarily object against the idea of Commander. I just like absolutely detest the concept of having three friends to play with.
Oh boy. Okay. So you're more like, I don't want to deal with this, but wait, wait a second. Don't you need a lot of people to draft? Hold on.
They are not friends. There is a big difference.
That's right. There's less politicking in 1v1.
I prefer to have seven enemies than three friends.
I see. You're way into the war of it all. You love the battle immediately. If the packs are cracking, it's time to crack some knuckles and get to fighting.
You know, my Magic playstyle was forged in the depths of the late 90s.
Uh-huh.
I come from that era.
Well, tell me about that. What was your first set? What was your first go?
Weatherlight.
Oh, beautiful. What a wild time.
I'm just like old enough to be considered ancient, but not old enough to have the power.
That's right. You don't have the the excessive riches of those cards that are unattainable by most.
I could have bought a Beta Sapphire for $40, and I refused that.
Ooh.
And it was pretty good straight from the pack. If I kept it in good nick, I would have been retired by now, probably.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I was a 16-year-old kid. $40 was $40 was an abstract concept for me. I could maybe afford one draft format. That was the sort of like frequency. That sort of maybe explains why later, when I returned to Magic, I loved playing draft, because that was the thing that I was deprived of when I was playing as a kid. I had to play Constructed because that was more affordable at that time, strangely enough.
I see what you're saying. Strangely enough, now that's not the case at all. I mean, man, the advent of Arena, the cost of cards altogether, even these days, it's just kind of like a weird... We've reversed it so far on the other direction that it's kind of interesting. So you played in Weatherlight, and you said, when I came back to Magic, when did you come back to Magic for good? What was the set that did it for you?
It was not the set that did it for me. It was weird email I got out of nowhere. I had this app on the on the phone that I played the Doers of Planeswalkers. That was the app that they started with the Magic. And because I played in it and I signed up for information email from them, they invited me to the beta of Arena.
Oh, nice.
And I said, oh, great. My phone was rubbish, so I couldn't play much on that. So I said, oh, good. I will install it on my computer and I will play some Magic on a computer and see how it goes. Long story short, I installed Arena, and 3 days later, I was Googling when is the next pre-release, which was 2 days from there. I went to the pre-release, trophied it, and the box I won, the deck box, is still the one that I'm using till today, because they never repeated good prizes anymore. So.
What's what was the set for the pre-release at that point?
That was Dominaria.
What a set to come back to. My God. Ooh. Do you have fond memories of Dominaria as a set for a draft environment?
I had no idea what I'm doing. I was putting damage on stack. That was the level of skill that I had at that time. I moved on a bit from there. I think that truly I started playing in the War of the Spark time.
Okay, that's a good spot.
I mean, I played all the time. I just like was basically rediscovering how to play Magic. It was like this person that didn't walk for months and then has to relearn how to do everything, and gravity changed all of a sudden for some reason that is unexplained to the physicist. But I think I got through that stage. Now I'm a relatively decent player again. I used to be really good. Like when I was a kid, I do have my Pro Tour credentials. I did my cash finishes on the GPs. But that was in the era where, well, no one played really at that level anymore.
I think, there was less competition at that point. Now there's so many Magic players in the world, it's impossible to really... I can't retain the names of newer Magic players that top 8 the way that I used to think of like the greats back in the day, because it would be like every Pro Tour featured them. It was like almost one of them was guaranteed a Hall of Fame spot, and... It just was a different time. Now it's like, who can I think about right now off the top of my head? Jean-Emmanuel Duprat is the first name that came up. And I just thought, think of a French name. One of them's going to come to you.
Oh, yeah. Jean-Emmanuel is amazing, and also the most brilliant limited player that I've ever seen in action.
Love that. Tell me more about this.
I was happy. I made an episode about Cube Draft with him as a guest where we analyzed his personal data from Cube, where he had something like 84% win rate on Arena and Cube Draft in best of three. It's sickening.
That's an insane win rate. That's unreal.
It's are you interested in soccer in any way?
Not at all. I hate to shut that down personally, but that doesn't mean my listeners aren't interested. And if I can get it from context, I'm about it.
So,
but I don't follow soccer.
In soccer data,
the most I've got is I used to sell hot dogs at soccer games in Montreal.
Very noble goal. That's people need their thing. Nourishment when they're watching football.
That's right.
There's too much.
That's right.
There's too much nothing happening. but in soccer, you have those graphs about players, about how many contacts with the ball they had and how many goals did they score from that. And you have this pile of dots, and there is one outlier, and that's Lionel Messi, who you might have heard about. Nope.
Oh, I know this one.
Oh, there you go. He's such an outlier. And I made the same graph for the Cube Draft for all the top 500 players on 17 lands. And there's this one dot at the top, and that's Jean-Emmanuel. So, amazing.
That's amazing. That's pretty sweet. Okay, so we've literally got an analog for like one of the all-time great soccer players, one of the all-time great Magic drafters. Literally, we have a one-to-one. That's pretty cool. I assume you've shared this information with him.
Oh, the graph was in the graph was in the slides. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
He's very humble, also, but I'm pretty sure that he's not unhappy about that comparison.
Yeah, you made his head a little bit bigger. His caps fit a little bit snugger now. That's not a bad thing. Some people deserve that boost. If you're getting your win rate up to 80, what was it? 84%?
83, I think. But
if your win rate is that high, I expect you to be a little cocky. I'm not gonna lie. If you're taking Cube Draft at an over 80% win rate, that's kind of nuts. That's pretty bananas.
Yeah, that's not accessible to us.
Exactly. I could never. I show up to a pre-release thinking, if I open one of the cards I'm excited about, then cool. But then I open a pack and I go, why do I do this to myself? I hate building the deck so much. Because it's sealed, and sealed is... It's a fun thing because I never get the FOMO of losing out on cards the way I can sometimes when I'm drafting, because I don't want a rare draft, but I'm like, well, that's a card I wanted for the collection. That doesn't feel so good. But then you've got a sealed pool and you're like, it's stone nothing or it's everything all at once. I take way too long.
You are showing the typical commander player skills of, oh no, I'm not going to cut this. Somehow it has to fit.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's why commander is specifically 99. Not 120, Not 110. It's 99, so you have to physically cut them to the right size.
I'll go one further. I'm an advocate for taking it to like 100 to 115. That's what I think it should be. I think there should be a sliding scale. If you go over 100, no tutors. How about that? You don't get any tutors, and that's it. That's my thought on it. Yeah, get a little wacky with the format.
You know, the problem with Commander players having decks that are bigger than 100, they will still keep their 27 lands in those.
That's, I mean, you're talking to a CDH person, maybe. They'll fight for it as much as possible. Starting to count the MDFCs as lands themselves, probably. But yeah, I mean, we definitely don't play enough lands. Who was it? Was it Karsten? Frank Karsten did the calculations, and it was something like 42 lands is the correct number for Commander decks.
I think that with the Mana Rocks, you can go down to 39.
That's right. And then Rachel Weeks and Josh Lee Kwai on the Command Zone said, we did a lot of testing in-house. 38 is the ideal number considering the way we build. You can decide for yourself if you go down to 37. I don't think so. But it's either 38 or you're going up, was their whole thing recently. And people hated that. People hated that so much. But I made some changes to my decks, and I've noticed it's much smoother. You get to play a lot more Magic when you have all the mana at your disposal.
Well, you know, it's not that different with limited players. Every single set is being released. The one question that I always get during my podcast is, can we play 16 lands this time?
Yes. Yes, exactly. The website's called 17 Lands. Let me tell you why.
There is a good reason for that. I think that in Tarkir, we can, even if you don't have too much fixing, go 18 lands. There is so much filtering, so much card draw. Just go 18 lands. If you hit your lands, the spell follow because you have card draw in this format that is really, really strong. If you're so at good. 16, you run into the risk that you're going to draw all your good cards and then not being able to play it, and you basically shoot yourself in the foot.
Exactly. I've been watching a lot of arena drafts online. I love watching Kenji. I love watching LSV. I love watching Cheon. I've been getting into arena drafts a lot more in the last year or so, and been going to 17 lands myself to try my hand at like drafting against the bots and thinking, how would I fare at this? Truly, I have no idea how they see a card and they go, that one over this. Honestly, this card that has done a lot of work for other people that I keep seeing in these, and I'm like, how does this work? How does LSV look at one card and go, oh, this common is better than every uncommon in the pack, turn pack one, you know, pick two or something? It's mind-boggling. This set so far has been confusing to me.
I had all three people that you mentioned as guests in my podcast analyzing their data. So I could probably give you some insight of what they are doing. Ocheon is extremely disciplined and is maximizing for power. Yes. LSV, if there's one thing that he's famous for, gut. And he's got a very good gut.
Exactly. That's how quick he is.
And Numot just makes a dream in his head and then tries to make that dream materialize. And he's very good at making sure that that dream materializes. So these are the three different approaches that they are doing.
And it's fun because you get that sense when you're watching each of them. So I could find myself looking at each of them in my YouTube recommended videos and going, what mood am I in? Because sometimes I'll watch Cheon talk himself out of a fun option, and I think to myself, this isn't the mood I'm in. I'm going to go over to Kenji's stream. Because Paul will look at something so fun. And you know what? Today's stream, and I don't mind spoiling this because it'll be a month or so from now till this episode even comes out, but Cheon picked the Storm Scale Scion, or the Storm Dragon, the 6-mana 4/4 dragon that gives an anthem to other dragons and has Storm. And he was agonizing between that and a Sultai Monument. He was saying, well, I have a bunch of Sultai cards. It's pack two, pick one. And he sees a Sultai Monument and goes, I should be picking this. This is the absolute correct pick here.
It is.
And he looks at the Storm Scale Scion, and it is. It's totally the right pick for him, especially at that moment. There's no red in sight for him. He's been cut out in the first pack. It's absurd. And then he goes, it's for you guys. I do have a lot of really good fixing that'll allow it. And then, of course, the first two games of the video, he cleans up because of the dragon. Like, literally lets his opponent get him down to 3 life. And he goes, okay, this turn, 2 spells, dragon. Here we go, 2 copies, restabilize, like it's nothing. and he just takes it from concession. It's incredible. But he does not pick the fun pick all the time.
No.
But it was an outlier for today.
I mean, Paul is obviously entertaining. I mean, otherwise you wouldn't be there in the coverage or during the streams. Mm-hmm. But he's partially infotainment, where not only you get the entertainment factor, but you also will learn things, how to do them. I think that Luis, if you try to replicate mm-hmm. Luis's strategies, you're not going to get far.
No, you can't.
Because you have to be Luis to replicate those. And there's maybe four of them in the world. So
it's impossible to replicate LSV and his picks, because I'll watch him go look through a pack of like six cards left, and I think there's only one card in his colors, and then the rest are all wrong for him. And he goes, oh, this card is amazing. It's really good. And it's like a gold card that aren't in his colors. And he goes, I can make this work somehow. And he picks it and goes, it's the best card in the pack. And somehow he finds a way to it. He'll first pick a Dragonstorm Globe over anything in a pack most games, and then kind of rub his hands together like, it looks like we've got ourselves a deck already. I'm like, that's just one. It's a mana rock. You haven't picked up anything else. It's fascinating, frankly.
It is one of my favorite mana rocks of all time, I have to say. Because what better than fix your mana to play dragons?
It's fascinating. The way people take on each set is an interesting thing. And I want to turn to you because you have a lot of data on this. I mean, it goes with your work. You're a data guy in Magic, but in real life, I know that you are a scientist. If I'm not mistaken, you work in... Are you a chemist? What was it?
I'm a biologist.
A biologist.
But a very, very, very small biologist. The microbiologist.
Yes, and a very specific one as well, correct?
Oh, yes. I work with the fecal matter. So I don't have to apologize to the editor for using the proper description. Yeah,
that's right. You don't. Yeah, no apologies to Ken. This is the only episode where we don't bleep that word if it comes up. I think it's fascinating that this is just like your life is, okay, I'm a biologist. I'm a microbiologist in a very specific field. You probably spend your time like analyzing, and then you bring that same approach to a card game.
And then I go home and I do some extra analyzing for relax.
Exactly. It's just how you're wired. And I feel like that must be like, it must be interesting to see you tackle different things in your life. You know, like when you were a kid, you're about to jump on the monkey bars. Were you going for it or were you looking it over? Like, what's the ideal angle and such, you know?
I did do those kind of things, I have to say. I'm not very proud of it, but I guess I was always wired to ponder things and find patterns, and I was good at it, and because I was good at it, they always pushed me to find more patterns, so I got even better in finding patterns, and then they trained me in finding the patterns and making sure that they stick, and I'm still doing it.
There we go. And you've imported that into being like largely influential in the Magic world with your website, because 17 lands is the standard. It literally,
specifically, not my website. I'm the PR person of 17 Lands, and other people are running it, and they do all the work. I just get all the credit, which is,
you get a lot of credit for it.
Quite a good deal, I guess. But I always correct people when they say it's my website. It's not. People who run it don't have time to go on the podcast and frolic around and do analysis. I know that the owner of 17 Lands played his last draft in MH3.
Oh, wow. That's some time ago.
No time. I mean, he's got a busy life, a good job, growing family, and other things. But let's do 5 seconds of silence for his struggles, because I'm sure that he would like to draft a bit more.
All right, Ken, you heard him. Circo wants 5 seconds of silence. We're going to give it to him. Here we go.
That's for you, Rob.
There we go, Rob. Thank you so much for what you do. Because frankly, this is, I mean, you are such an effective spokesperson for the website, because every time I see you pop up on my feed, I'm like, okay, here we go. Is it either advertising an episode, or are we getting some data just right into the feed? What are we doing? And I see the breakdown icon like that you put for every episode or every what's coming up. And I'm like, okay, what's this going to be about? What's some mind-blowing something or other that you found out about this? It's very fun to see you pop up in my feed.
Yeah, I mean, I did definitely part of the driving force, because, you know, when you do data analysis in Limited, you're not doing it for the money or fame or glory. You're doing it because you're interested in it. Otherwise, it wouldn't just, it doesn't make any monetary sense to do limited content. If I wanted to go to content creation for a profit, I would do either angry rants, by the way, my pet peeve, or I would go straight to Commander content. I even have a name for my podcast if I did a podcast on Commander. It will be called Commander Data, and no one can convince me otherwise.
Commander Data, and no one could convince me otherwise, is part of the title as well. That's very fun. Commander Data is a good one, and I think that anybody who wanted to plant their flag in that, consider this one planted.
I might be sued by...
Circo's got that one locked up.
I might be sued by Roddenberry Estate.
Yeah, maybe. But I think they'll get it. They'll be like, oh, it's two words? I guess so. All right. I have 17 lands popped up in front of me right now. And I want to know, just before we dive into your pet peeve, because you teased it, I just want to pick up a rare and see what your thoughts are on it. And just to get an idea of how your brain works. Mox Jasper is the first rare that I opened in pack one, pick one. And I want to hear your thoughts on maybe one of the most chase mythics in the whole set. And I can then give you the perspective of it from a Commander player and see if maybe that resonates with anybody out there.
Before I answer, is it a paper draft or arena draft?
Okay, I see where you're going. Okay, let's just say paper draft because that's how I prefer to
draft. Yeah, just pick the mocks. Don't worry about the rest. It will come together. Look, you cannot pass a card that is worth as much as the draft is because you basically, even if you flunk the draft, you played it for free. Fine.
It's like that Tarmogoyf pick. You know, back in the day, people got so mad about it. You're picking a foil Tarmogoyf. Yeah, I'm picking a foil Tarmogoyf. Sorry to waste a pick on something that was at the time, what was it, several hundred dollars? You know?
He sold it for $8,000 or something?
Yeah, especially because after that point, it was the Tarmogoyf that got picked, right? So, like, that's an extra thing to
but
it
when
as
you
well.
Think of, and, you know, pro players need to maximize value. And for him, picking up this Tarmogoyf and having a guaranteed $400 is better value than betting it on picking like a menial card for their deck and hoping that they will cash the Pro Tour, was it? Yeah. Or was it GP? I think it was a Pro Tour. It must have been a Pro Tour. So it was a very reasonable pick. And you should learn from that kind of shrewdness.
That's right. So Circo's going with a pack one, pick one, Mox Jasper. Arena draft, would you make the pick?
God, no, no, never.
Literally anything else is better in this format.
I'm swimming in gems and in wild cards because I'm a draft player. I don't need the cards. I don't craft them because I get them from drafting.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I have the wild cards lying around. And just like sometimes there is midweek magic and there is some weird format I never played. I'm just going to craft the whole deck because what else am I going to do with the wild cards?
Do you play a lot of other formats?
But before we go, wild cards usually are abundant for the limited players. Weirdly, I don't understand how you get even common wild cards nowadays. And I'm running out of those, and I'm wondering what will happen if I completely run out. What am I going to do? Where do I get my common wild cards? Because you don't open them in the packs, I think, anymore. So
I have no idea.
Because I know that what I normally was doing is that before the set was released, I crafted all of it. And then when I play drafts, I get the gems as reward.
Exactly.
But I had to stop because I ran out of commons and I don't know what to do with it. And I don't know where to get the common wildcards. Anyway, maybe a question for your listeners to answer in the comments or something.
Yeah. If you have the answer to this, you can email us at amithebolus@gmail.com or you can get at us on Blue Sky and we'd love to know.
Tag me if you're on Blue Sky. Yeah.
Exactly. If you can get spell at Circovis. And we're not going to do it for you. We're going to leave. We're going to say our guest is redacted. You figure it out. Well, I will literally grab a handful of Scrabble tiles and find you know, nine letters that make up a name and call that Circovitz. I think that's just going to be the spelling.
Okay, but with that detraction to the wild cards, what was the question again?
The question was, I mean, you answered it. If this were your pack one, pick one, what's your thought on Mox Jasper? And you said literally anything is better unless you're playing it physically, in which case take the money. And that's kind of where I come at it from as a Commander player. Mox Jasper is one of those moxes that who cares? You know, if you play a dragon deck, you fine, enjoy yourself a free mox.
Changelings.
Yeah, the what's it called? The Changeling Outcast or like Universal Automaton.
There are a couple of eggs that are dragons that cost 2 mana.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think the one from Midnight Hunt is like an 0-4 egg dragon.
Oh, that's right. Smoldering Egg, right? That's the one, the flip one?
Yeah, I think that. And there's, I think, 1 or 2 2-mana dragons. The biggest irony of Tarkir Dragonstorm, of course, is that the cheapest dragon in the set doesn't work with the Mox. Because it's the white free drop that prevents the activated abilities of artifacts, creatures,
and planeswalkers. Oh my god.
I find it so hilarious because, you know, I played it a couple of times in dragon decks with my globes. And of course, it stops globes from working. So you play it early, but then all of the other dragons are moved one turn back.
Yeah, it is kind of silly that this is where they put dragon on the type line. I don't understand why they needed this to be a dragon. But yeah, sure, fine. I mean, why not?
It actually is a cunning design. It is more of a downside in dragon decks than it's an upside in limited. So that's an interesting spin on the playing between advantage. In constructed, it's of course a huge advantage because you have like the collector oof on the bigger stick. But
exactly.
In limited, it's actually a downside most of the time.
Which I do miss. I think that like the making cards with downsides has become less of the norm. Like to consider older designs, like say like the Demons of Alpha, for example, that required a sacrifice at every upkeep or a mana requirement, or Clockbridge Troll, for instance, from Eldraine, Throne of Eldraine, needed you to sacrifice a creature. So you know, needs an opponent to sacrifice a creature, something like that.
But it gives them material for that.
It gives that to them, exactly. So it puts a clock on it and stuff. I think that there's some room for designing with a bit of a downside.
I think that, you know, I mean, I don't want to be rude when I'm in the lair of commander players,
please.
But I'm pretty sure that it can be tracked down to commander players' preferences. They want on the upside, and they want to do fun stuff, and it's all about feels.
Yes.
And because of that, you cannot put feel bets, because if it's all about feels, then the feel bets are not good. And lots of those downside cards are interesting from the deck builder's perspective. And, you know, like, I'm not
Absolutely.
Trying to generalize that every commander player is like that, but I'm pretty sure that plurality might be like that. There are always the, you know, wheelers of this world that want to turn every downside into an upside, and that's their goal of
Yes.
Existence in the commander community. But I think that generally WotC will try to avoid the downsides because of the feel bet. And
Right.
there are mechanics that just naturally create feel bets, and these are going to be rarer and rarer. Like, people don't particularly like milling, being milled, for example. And
I also think that they haven't completely shied away from the downside designing. Like, for example, Doomsday Excruciator in Commander, it can be kind of like the perfect, you know, it's Doomsday on legs, right? So you've got yourself a 6/6 flying. And when it enters, if it was cast, each player exiles all but the bottom 6 cards of their library face down. And you have to just like hope that you're not exiling anything that you really need, which, of course, in a limited format, you're dealing 6 in the air every turn. That's pretty good.
Well, yeah, you rather hope that you're going to end the game sooner.
I really love the design of this card, and I think the art is fantastic. And I love specifically, at the beginning of your upkeep, you also draw a card. So it kind of turns that clock faster for you, the person who's in charge of this demon. And I think that's a beautiful design. I think that's so cool. But I have to agree that the avoidance of drawbacks on cards comes very likely from the fact that they want to design the fun-feeling stuff for Commander. There's a reason land destruction isn't so plentiful anymore. I mean, many reasons for that.
I was a prolific Ponza player back in the day. You know, turn 3 Stone Rain, turn 4 Avalanche Riders, turn 5 Pillage, and then start doing the Hammer of Bogard and things. Happy times. While the opponent sits there and just like, oh.
Yeah, 1v1, it's definitely easier to get away with that kind of thing because you're singling out one person because there's only one person to play against, right? So it's like, you see that more happening in like Canlander, you know, 1v1 dual commander, stuff like that also plays that kind of stuff. Whereas when it's 4 people and you have to destroy one land and you keep going at that one person, it kind of feels like you're singling one person out. That's not great. And then you end up with the mass land destruction stuff, which ends up being, you know, adding 2 hours to the clock.
Frowned upon? Well, at least, you know, if you play Armageddon, make sure that you make the board state so that you can win very quickly.
Yes, ideally you're doing that, and your planeswalkers are due for an ultimate, or like you have a ton of mana rocks ready to go. I'm not saying I want mass land destruction back, but I am saying that it is fun to watch. You know, Cedric and Patrick, when they were on the Resleevables doing their flashback games where they had the old deck lists going up against each other, and Armageddon is in almost every one of those early videos, and it happens a lot. And they have to play around it. They have to focus on, you know, these other elements of playing Magic that are just no longer of consideration. And I think that's fascinating that that's a thing that we're kind of losing in a multiplayer format like this that's become so popular and stuff. I just think it's fascinating, though.
Yeah, that's why I think that the more elegant way is the upheaval version. When you just like cast upheaval with 20 mana in the pool, just recast a bunch of stuff, empty board, happy times.
Which I think it might be banned in Commander, I think.
I would expect upheaval? So. I don't know.
Upheaval
but,
is, yes, banned in Commander.
Because they don't want the game to end fast.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't allow you to finish the game quick at all. Unless you're playing a Vela of the Nightclad deck, in which case maybe that's the win con for you. Moving on from discussing Commander and the designs of yore, I want to discuss your pet peeve, because you gave me a bit of a teaser early on, and I want to hear what you've got to say. What is your pet peeve in Magic?
So I'm split between the pet peeve and assessing whether I'm the evil person, which I know I am, but... So
you could go either way. Either you've got a story where you might have been the villain and you seem pretty confident that you were, or we can discuss a pet peeve of yours surrounding Magic.
Let's go with the villain story. It's relevant and it's recent, and I want your opinion. And
I'd love to.
I will provide context, because definitely what I did is not evil when you just do it to random LGS, but it might be a bit more evil when you do it to your own LGS.
Okay.
Do you know of the card Cori Steelcutter?
Cori Steelcutter. I will say, if anybody's paying attention to Standard in this time, you are very, very familiar with Cori Steelcutter. For those of you who don't know it, I'll read it for you. It's a one in a red artifact equipment from Tarkir Dragonstorm. And it says equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has trample and haste. Pretty good so far. With an equip cost of one in a red. So effectively, you play it for two, you equip it for two, four mana to give a creature +1/+1, and trample and haste. Not a bad rate already, but it also has flurry, which is the Jeskai mechanic that says whenever you cast your second spell each turn, Cori Steelcutter will allow you to create a 1/1 white monk creature token with prowess, and you can attach Cori Steelcutter to that monk. It is one of the craziest aggro cards to be printed in recent memory.
Aggro, tempo, you name it. Works with Lurus if you're into older formats as well. So
it does.
Yeah.
It's brutal. Go ahead. Tell me about this story now that we have the full scope of Cori Steelcutter.
So I figured out that it's going to be on the upwards trajectory in terms of price, but I did have in the back of my head that I saw a playset of them in the binder of my LGS. So I just, without thinking much, middle of the day, I'm working from home a lot now because I do a lot of lecturing, so I'm not bound by the office hours.
Excellent.
Packed my car, went to the LGS, dropped in, went straight to the binder, took out four of them. They were £1 each, so like maybe $1.50.
Awesome.
Now they're going for maybe $14, $15 or something.
Yeah, they went up pretty quick.
Yeah, I just swiped them, went to the till, with the owner, who knows me very well because I'm there every week. I mean, I'm basically part of the family almost. And he looks at me suspiciously and says, "Are these worth something?" And I'm just like,
"Oh boy,
oh yeah, they are. Now charge me." And then he puts me the card reader. I put my phone, and the phone says, "Didn't recognize the face." I said, "You see, even my phone doesn't recognize that kind of a smile from my face." He was bitter for days. I talked with his wife and she said, "Oh yeah, he told me all about it. He couldn't stop talking all about it." So, obviously, when you go to a strange LGS and you sell a bargain and you get it, it's their problem because they didn't evaluate card properly and they lost. But if you do it to your LGS, it might be a bit dodgy. I did try to redeem myself by buying a collector boosters, which I normally don't do on the same evening. But Am I the bolus for getting card very cheap from the LGS, despite of me being friends with them and knowing them very well?
This is what I'm talking about. The amount of times we've had conversations or pet peeves or stories that involve gameplay and surrounding gameplay, we've done so many of them, some even overlap. The amount of times where we've talked about playing a board wipe responsibly in a game of Commander has been done so much that it's even in the template I send new guests. Please don't bring that as your topic or your story. I've yet to have something like this come up, and I'm thrilled about it because it's very complex. This is very interesting. Because part of me is like, this is your LGS. I probably wouldn't have taken all four, if I'm being honest.
What's the point of me having two of them if you need to place it for your deck?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you are playing them, then I say all bets are off. If you're flipping them...
No, I'm not flipping them.
Oh, you're going to play them? Okay, well, not the bolus. I don't think that's a problem. I think that you got in before you could. You got in before that they marked it up, before they got to MTG stocks and got a good look at them. I don't know. It just it's a bummer for them, but also it's like you're a win. You are there often. You're buying stuff. You're playing there.
Oh, they're going to get their money back, I'm pretty sure, from me.
They've more than gotten their money back already.
I'm a habitual pack opener. I really love opening packs, and it's a problem.
Yeah. See, I don't know. It's kind of... Ah, man, this was less juicy after that. If the moment you said that you're going to play them, I'm like, that's fine. You were going over there to buy your cards before they got too expensive, and then they did.
I got them some friends, even.
Oh, wow. Is that Tursa?
Yep, that's
Tursa Light.
Tursa, yeah.
What's the full name on that one?
Tursa Light Shatter.
Light Shatter. What an incredibly interesting card. Is that also in the aggro decks right now? Is that doing all right?
In some versions. I saw them popping out in deck after deck, and they are still cheap online, so I just bought a playset because better safe than sorry. I think that they are played also in Jeskai Oculus, which is another deck that I'm playing. Oh, you asked
Jeskai
me about...
Jeskai Oculus is interesting.
You asked me if I play different formats, and I do. I do play standard whenever I can, and whenever I can...
And there it is.
...terrorize enough people. We do have a cube draft playing group, which is sort of a different format on its own, right? We play Vintage Cube, and I am an Amulet player in Modern.
Okay, didn't expect that from you.
I don't play Modern, I play Amulet. That's it.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that's okay. It's like Richard from MTG Goldfish being the Jund guy forever, and the Jund dream is dead, so he's like, I'm off of Modern altogether.
And that's why I play Amulet, because it's been tier zero for multiple metagames.
So long.
If you know the meme.
It's just impossible.
But it's true, the deck is very resilient and it's always underplayed because people are worried about playing it. It's not that difficult.
You know what? Who was it? Dom Harvey? That's like the aficionado of all things.
I read the Bible. I read the Bible.
Yeah, exactly.
80 pages of the instructions on how to play Amulet.
Yeah, it's dense. You know what? Chatting with you is making me realize just how deep I am in other... Because I would consider myself not a... much beyond Commander. I love Commander. It's my format. It's the only format I really play besides like a pre-release, so I'll play Sealed. If there's a cube going, I'll play a good cube, but that rarely happens for me. But it's interesting to know how much of that stuff I still consume anyway.
I try to, like, because I draft, I get a lot of chaff, and I can't keep all of it. So most of that I bring back to the bulk box and the LGS, but if I don't need the cards because I don't feel like throwing them away is the right thing. I'll source the throwing away part to the LGS if they need to. But I always try to find out cards that I'm going to keep. And I was so happy that I found a playset of Bitter Reunions because that means I consider that this card might be playable at some stage. So
that's fun. It's like finding a bunch of stock ups, which you know is going to be playable. The $11 uncommon from last set.
I only got two in my draft. I'm not very happy about it because I will probably need to buy two of them at some stage. I'll just crack packs. That's what I did with the deep cavern bats. I didn't have four and I just was cracking packs until I opened the fourth one. And my friends were looking at me like a maniac because I'm opening pack and like, oh.
Yeah.
And there's like a chase rare in there and I'm like, oh, no bat.
No bat. You opened Ozure Tack, the multiplying your tokens
I
one
did.
That everybody wants.
I did.
Of course you did.
I could have sold it and bought like 20 bats, but that's not the same.
It's not the fun part. You like to crack packs. Okay, so wait, we got to come back to the story. it's fun because the podcast, normally we cut back to me and Morgan, and Morgan and I will discuss. But I do think that I've put a pretty solid line in the sand saying, if you're playing the cards and they have it at that price as you walk in, you buy it. I don't think that that's like necessarily screwing anybody over. You got there before they could get there.
Did I have to rub it in his face, though?
Well, I mean, look, he asked about it and you said, yeah, it's heading up there. It's not there yet, but it's getting there. Now it's $14, you know, like now it's expensive. I remember a while ago I had a Staff of Domination back when it was worth something. Back when Staff of Domination from like Darksteel, I guess it was like the original one. I picked it up for an old deck. I found out it was still worth something like $30. And then I was like, you know what? I don't play this card. I've had it in my binder for a long time. I could really use that money to buy another like three cards that I really want. I'm going to trade it in. And then that next week, they showed Commander Legends was going to have a reprint of Staff of Domination. And I had the LGS owner over there being like, you know, because he knew me as somebody who knows Magic, and he knew me as somebody who was not necessarily, I wasn't content creating at that point, but I was definitely in my beginnings in that. And he was kind of like, did you know about this? Did you know this was coming? And I had to be like, no, I had no clue. I'm just that lucky. And it's the one time I felt bad about trading in a card and I didn't even have the knowledge, but if I had the knowledge, would I have done it? No, I don't think I would have. At my LGS. At a store I hate? Probably. F*** them.
Oh, yeah, go.
Sorry, Ken.
Lace it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, if I had three copies of it and I knew it was time to sell, I'd sell them. Yeah, of course. Sorry, buddy. Your store is ass. You guys are mean. Every time I come in here, your staff huffs and puffs when I'm just trying to pay for a pack of dice and play the pre-release. Yeah, right. I think I'm done with these guys.
You're lucky that you have a choice. We have one LGS and we have to keep it afloat on right. A shoestring budget.
Right, you guys.
My place, we have 20,000 people living here, and probably around 17,000 of them are retirees. So,
okay,
not much traffic in the good old LGS. We had quite a large catchment area for people coming to play the. It must feel wow. Bad when you drive for like an hour and then the draft doesn't fire because there is like five people.
Yeah, yeah, that almost happened in a pre-release for me recently. Aetherdrift was not popular in my area. We had four of us. That's what we did.
Can play two-handed.
We round robined.
Oh, you round robin. Elegant.
We round robin in the end.
Sorting out who's the better one.
Exactly. We tried our best, and even then, we just got like packs per win instead of any prizes because it's what's it really mean? And then we got a couple extra packs out of the deal for showing up. But it was wild how unpopular Aetherdrift was versus Tarkir, we were lucky to get a seat.
By the way, my pet peeve would be lack of influx of the fresh blood and not really having incentives for younger players to get into competitive formats. Lack of that.
Oh, tell me more about this. I love this. Tell me more about this thought.
When I was a kid, and believe it or not, there was a time like that. I also was a child once.
We talked about the monkey bars before. We know it's real.
Exactly. Although in communist Poland at that time, monkey bars were probably covered in barbed wire for extra stamina. But when I was a kid that played Magic, I was 17 maybe, and I was basically terrorized by my younger brother to go with him to a GP because he really wanted to play, and my parents wouldn't allow him to go alone. So I went with him. I spiked it, obviously. My first GP,
mm-hmm.
I went 7-1 day one. I went 4-2 day two, and I...
Not bad.
Yeah, it was pretty solid. I ended up 17th. And right now, 17th place on a GP would pay you, I don't know, $250, $500.
It's pretty nice.
But at that stage, because I was a rookie player that never had pro points in their life, I got an extra cash purse because there was a special prize pool, I don't know if you know about it, for people who never had a pro point in their life. So you could go to a GP, be 57th, and still win a good cash. I won $2,000 from that because I was number one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was number one ranked amateur player. Can you believe what kind of a boost for a young player this is? It paid for my next couple of GPs that I could go to. It made me feel amazingly special, even though I was just 17th on that GP. And lots of people had the same experience, and that experience doesn't exist anymore. And because of, you know, when you're a young player and you have to compete with the likes of LSV and Reed Duke, how can you outplay 2 decades of pro play experience? They've seen all the tricks in the book. It's very hard. And that's why I think that if you want to encourage young people participation in competitive events, bring that back. Make sure that there's a special prize pool for people who never have been on the Pro Tour, who never have gotten pro points. And make sure that there is this kind of extra incentive for people to think that, oh, you know, I might bother to come to that GP. Because
yeah,
I might win it.
Some effort into this.
I get to the second day, I get a good cash prize and maybe some invites for amateurs as well, and refresh that kind of player base and bring the new blood. Because you go to the Pro Tour once, you get a bit of experience, find a team, start practicing, and we have a much broader ecosystem in the player base.
At that point, yeah.
And there is something to be said that it's always great to see LSV playing on the Pro Tour. Don't get me wrong. It's a crowd pleaser, but it sort of becomes stale when there is so little turnover. And as you said in the beginning, you don't recall that many new players entering the Pro Tour and staying there and sticking there, because there is no infrastructure for supporting that kind of thing. Give them a bit of those, you know, you put training wheels on every card, remove the drawbacks, give a bit of those training wheels to the younger players so that they can get their foothold in the pro scene, so that they can actually break into the, because sometimes it's just like luck that you manage to cross that level from an amateur player into the pro player. And it was fine in the late 90s when you just needed a bit of luck to break through, and maybe a bit of infrastructure, and being born in the West would also help, because as a Polish player, then it was completely unaffordable to travel to all the GPs. But right now you need a ton of luck. You need to spike like 3 times in a row, and spiking once is already requiring a lot of luck when you're a beginner player. Spiking 3 times in a row just won't happen. And because it won't happen, you won't get the foothold. And because you won't get the foothold, you will not transition from this very good grinder into the pro player unless you're like dedicating all your life to it, which nobody really could be doing.
Exactly.
That's my pet peeve.
I like that a lot. I think that's a fun idea to bring back, to incentivize more. So like there is some effort in this regard with the invitation to come back. Like there is like a level at which, like, you know, even if you're first timer or not, if you get to a certain point, you kind of get that like invitation chip for like a next day or another time. And I think that's great, because even like the analog for me, because like I'm a stand-up comedian, I've been a comedian for 15 years almost. And the thing that kind of allows you to keep going when you're so new and to broaden your horizons within that is performing and having somebody at that show take notice and going, hey, you should come do my show. And that invitation snowballs into more invitations as long as you keep doing what you're doing and you're good at it. And I think that that ports over to this point, which is, if there's a way to keep inviting these people and saying, hey, welcome to Magic, welcome to playing pro, welcome, you did well, good job, come on back for the other one, the next one is on us, even without the prize, that's like a huge stamp of approval. I kind of thought about, you know, how like teams will do drafts in sports, like, you know, it's hockey or basketball, and hey, it's time to draft this player and this guy, they've got this overall draft pick or whatever. So like you've got all these teams that might be able to be like, hey, well, this new guy showed up to his first GP, got invited to the next two off of that performance alone. They're like top seeded for an actual draft pick. I don't know. I think that would make it also exciting to be invested in the players, the journey of the player. But again, asking for that kind of thing is kind of nuts, considering Magic is much smaller than pro sports. It hasn't even cracked as like a top esport thing.
Think about it from a different perspective, because I think that you're onto something. Instead of making them draft the young players as a celebration, make sure that pro teams have some kind of privileges of being pro teams. Make sure that one spot in the team is reserved for a rookie player that they have to mentor. And then they can draft it. There's like a list of 100 young players, and they basically select one in order to mentor the young player and make sure that they have a good transition. That could be another prize. And it's fun to be in the pro team.
Yeah, totally. You get to be like, hey, I'm doing something right. Like, I'm on a team with these guys. I'm discussing this. sure, you hang back and listen for a little bit at first, and you get what you can glean from all that, and then your confidence will be boosted for sure. You'll come away with a lot of lessons.
Networking is important.
Huge deal. It's massive. I think that, like, with CDH picking up as well, like competitive commander, you've got certain people who like to workshop stuff together. You get a bunch of Discords where they all come together and make this one deck, like, as good as it can be. I think that it's, you know, we're not too far off from the team, at least in, like, the pro, because there isn't necessarily a wizard sanctioned event for competitive commander. Like, CDH is not like Wizards, like, hey, CDH has this here. So they have all their own little, like, their all their tournaments that they put together, and you know, all their, you know, some crazy prizes and some unbelievable turnouts. It's just a matter of time before we get ourselves another, like, okay, this group, this is now their name, and they should have room for somebody new to kind of learn along the way. I love this idea of, like, a mentorship thing.
Team Crux Thumbs.
Yeah, the Team Crux Thumb. Or bring back dumb names. That's what I want. I want to bring back dumb names of deck lists. You know, I don't need to know that it's Esper Fairies. Let's call it, hey, this deck's called Go Away because I keep bouncing everything. Something dumb. I would rather that.
Machine Head.
Machine Head.
Anyone remembers that? Black red control in the was it invasion block constructed? They were good. They were good names. They just don't make sense from the historical perspective, and people get confused when they listen to those decks.
Well, there's also like stuff like Prosbloom, right? Prosper's Bloom is like, it is indicative of the cards involved in the first ever combo deck, but it's like, it's still a cool sounding name that's also a little bit dumb.
Mm.
Prosbloom, it's two, prosperity and blooming, it's synonyms, maybe close enough. I don't want to keep you too long because I'm realizing what time it is right now and you're in another time zone where it's much later than here. Sirkovits, I gotta say thank you so much for taking the time out of the day and have a chat with me, and first of all, provide a great story and the pet peeve leading to a lot of really fun stuff. I hope people really enjoy this episode. I think they will.
You see, I'm not only numbers. I mean, I
yeah.
When I was going to the uni, I was basically split between going to study biotechnology or going to study acting.
Oh,
and I'm probably compensating for that while doing my podcast career. I can be in front of the microphone. Happy times.
You're doing a bit of both. Hell yeah! Where would you like people to check you out? Where would you want them to find you online?
Preferably, if they want the quality content, find me on Blue Sky. I also am on Twitter, but I stopped posting data on Twitter. On Elon Musk's X.com platform. I'm not using
We'll still call it Twitter, no problem.
Anymore. No, I specifically want to call it Elon Musk's X.com platform because Twitter doesn't exist anymore. Uh-huh. It died.
It died a long time
ago. Good stuff is on Blue Sky where I'm under Sierkowicz. I also have YouTube, Sierkowicz, and I do have a podcast called, believe it or not, Magic Numbers, where I talk about magic through the lens of numbers. You guessed it. Also, if I can plug, 70 lands worth supporting, worth using. People think it's a website with data, but it's a learning tool on how to play magic. And if you use it properly, you're going to learn so much. You don't need to go that as deep as I go with the analysis. I do it for you,
right,
free of charge. But if you want to explore a bit what you're doing differently, what you could be doing differently, and if you're interested in drafting, that's the place to go. So do support them, give them some love, and do use them, because the more people use it, the more data I have to analyze. Hey.
And that makes you very happy. That's the biggest smile you've had all night.
It makes my computer very sad because it barely can carry the file sizes that we're dealing with as is. But, you know, we'll get there.
We'll get there. Yeah, pat your computer on the top for a second. Tell it, good job. Maybe it'll...
I can't tap it too hard because it might disintegrate.
Okay, yeah. Well, be careful with it, but you be nice to your machine. It'll be nice back.
I'm always nice to it.
Good. You keep it that way. I think we got to head back and chat with Morgan. I did top load our discussion a little with the verdict. I think it's going to be an easy one to chat after this. Let's check in with Morgan. Thank you for joining me, Sirko. I really appreciate you being here. And we're back in the booth. I am delighted to have gotten to speak to Sirkovits. Thank you so much for calling in. I'm thrilled. First of all, a man who does his research, I'm flattered. Thank you so much for doing that and coming to the show prepared with both options, a pet peeve and a story. And frankly, I got into it with him in the conversation, and I don't have Morgan here to really discuss with. So this back end part is going to be a little bit quick. Before I get into my opinions and solidifying the same things that I've mentioned to Sirkovits, I do want to mention we've been doing the mailbags as a bit of an experiment. Of course, it's like it's not, you know, we're not whole hog in it yet. We're still trying to figure out what works for us, because we're essentially doubling our output. But we want to, for you and for us, the flow of it being weekly works a little bit better for me to kind of keep it top of mind and add a little urgency. And I think that it keeps people on their toes about a new episode, and they come to expect it every week. So I'm trying. I don't know what we will be doing to kind of ensure that it keeps on this trajectory, but I'm working on it with Morgan, with Ken. We're going to be trying to discuss different ways that we can make the podcast a little bit more engaging. There were some plans for video and doing it live on Twitch that kind of got kicked around, but it kind of feels like maybe not Twitch, but still potentially a video situation. I'm looking into it and I'm trying to figure out what direction we're pulling into, but that's the update on the podcast. I would love it if you gave me more feedback. Blue Sky at Mike Carrozza or Am I the Bowlcast on Blue Sky. You can email us at amithebolus@gmail.com. You can message us directly on Blue Sky, whatever you like. If you have any feedback for the podcast, I will hear it. And like, I know I kind of, was a little flippant with that guy who said we do too many ads off the top, but have you listened to podcasts? They're all, it's the world we live in. You know, there's a fast forward button and I put the description. I put like a little bit of a skip intro button, and I also have outlines of when the ads are happening. So I hope that's enough for you guys, but it's, again, feedback like that. I'm ready to hear it. I need to find ways to at least have the feedback rattling around in my head to kind of find new ways to make it better for our listeners. I just want you guys to enjoy it enough to want to come back every week, you know, and I think it's important for us to listen, to be ready for it. So again, at Am I the Bowlcast on Blue Sky, amithebolus@gmail.com, at Mike Carrozza on Blue Sky, on Instagram, on anything, and then also at Indigo Gentleman on Blue Sky. So that'll do it for that. Now, I've already, if you've listened to the episode, you know how I feel about Sirko's story, and you know how I feel about his pet peeve, and I agree still to this day. Obviously, we recorded this chat a couple months ago because we're talking about Tarkir Dragonstorm instead of Final Fantasy, but hey, it still holds, you know? Sirko, I don't think if, you know, you went to your LGS and you bought stuff that was marked at the price it was marked by them, the people who are professionals in this area, well, yeah, you bought them. You're going to play them. You're playing them. That's kind of how it works, you know, especially if you're somebody who's so present in their community. You spend a lot more than most people. It kind of feels like you get a little bit of a pass. You could be a dick elsewhere. I mean, I talked about an LGS I don't quite care about. And I would feel no problem doing this over there. Not going to lie. But that said, I don't think Sirkovits is the bolus for that. He's going to be playing the cards, and he got them at a good deal. Who's to say that isn't, like, aside from the LGS owner who did not like that he did that and was steamed about it for a little while after. I digress. I really like his pet peeve. No incentives for new players to join competitively. This idea of drafting a newer player into testing teams is so fun, so cool. And I really hope that we could see some momentum in that direction. I think that'd be a lot of fun. So Sirko, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate you taking the time. It took a lot to coordinate this. We spent months trying to get Sirkovits on the podcast. As a fan of Limited as a format, as a casual observer and lover of Limited, it's just a lot of fun to think about. Like I rarely get to draft, and I want to appreciate every set for what it was designed for instead of just the legends I like, you know, for Commander or like the big splashy cards I'm going to be putting in all my decks that need them. So I've been thinking about more and more. I really, really like Limited. I've been a big fan of the resleevables pre and post Cedric. With Cedric or and after Cedric, with pre and post Chapin, let's say. So lots of really cool Limited content to shout out there, and I feel like that's going to be our shout out for today. Again, your feedback is welcome. I appreciate you listening all the way up to this end. Shout out to Morgan Sanchez. Shout out to Ken Peddle. And shout out to you. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good day. It's time to scoot it. We're scooting this day, baby. Bye-bye.